We believe our technical problems are behind us, so it's smooth sailing from here on out with my guest, Giuliano Marinković, talking about a pretty amazing series of UFO incidents involving the Serbian Air Force. We will come back and jump right into the heart of it. He interviewed five different Yugoslav generals to get all these details, and it's a pretty good one. We'll be right back. Giuliano, thank you very much again for your patience, and thank you, listeners, for your patience as well. We've got it all figured out now. We're moving on. Can you, so to reset the scene, 2011, this book gets published. It gets publicized at a Serbian Air Force and Air Defense Headquarters event where this general promotes the book, and you notice that there's a chapter that deals with UFOs, a series of incidents from 1975. Pick up the story from there.
Absolutely, yeah. That was sort of official confirmation, of course, and backing of the group of the book by the Serbian Air Force. And there is this exceptional chapter about UFO intrusions over the former Yugoslavia. And of course, we should again mention that Yugoslavia now is a defunct country. These incidents were happening in 1975. Where six republics were part of federation and they had unique air force, Yugoslav air force, of course. All these pilots that were member of this regiment are now living all through the former Yugoslavia. Some of these pilots are in Croatia, for example, some of them are in Serbia and so on. And when this book was presented, immediately, of course, journalists noticed that in the region and they started to also locate these guys from these regiments. They are now, of course, retired. And unfortunately, these were, again, sensational articles, very light articles. They didn't cover the subject properly, so sort of the field was already damaged, I would say. So it was really hard to pick up the ball. So I had to do everything from the beginning. I used to tell them I was already covering UAP incidents very seriously. This is the previous work, and one thing led to another. I was able to gather a really big group, and the journalist from Belgrade, Dragan Vujicic, also helped me. So there was a network of people, and in the end, we were able to reconstruct the case. Many people stepped forward, and I will give a short overview of what was actually what was happening there.
Yes, yes, please.
Yeah. So, for example, the incident started on the Croatian side. Of course, then in 1975, this was all part of Yugoslavia. So on the south of Croatia, there is a peninsula called Prevlaka, where there was a radar station of the Yugoslav radar network. And they were started to pick the uncorrelated targets that would come from Italian side over the open sea. They would stop somewhere in the region of the famous city Dubrovnik, and the speeds would be up to 4,000 miles per hour. Then these targets would decelerate to around 40 kilometers per hour, which would be 24 miles roughly, and then they would sometimes also hover. So, of course, radar station picked that up. They would send these reports to the headquarters. And actually, headquarters was not interested, which is very interesting reaction because they couldn't actually classify these targets. Nothing flies like that. Nothing performs like that. And they would just say to radar station Prevlaka, please don't send us these anymore because we can't classify them and we are not interested. They said it had to be a radar glitch, right? And however, of course, the Prevlaka has three different radars, three different frequency bands, and of course they would pick on different radars these. So there was something definitely happening there, and in the end they stood by those reports and they continued to send them. The second part of the story was that phenomena started to intrude more and more towards the continental part of the Yugoslavia, towards the now Republic Montenegro. And that is where actually the 172nd Aviation Regiment was stationed around the city Podgorica on the military airport there. Then it was called city Titograd. Now it is called Podgorica, the capital of Montenegro. And these UFOs were observed by the pilots there because that regiment was doing very frequent training flights with also these pilots from Zambia and Libya. And that started to affect the flights, actually. They would start to say, what is this? It is following us. It would be a very strange yellowish-orange light that would appear suddenly in the sky. And actually, one detail that I can't recall that I encountered that in any other case, it would start to happen immediately, always 50 minutes after the training flights would start. So training flights would start, airplanes would take off, and 50 minutes later, these phenomena, these reddish yellow ball would start to appear. And there was many speculations what was happening there. The headquarters was receiving these reports from the commander of the regiment, which was retired General Zvonko Jurjevich. He was the commander at the time of the regiment. And at one point, he actually decided to try to inspect what that was. They were also suspecting that maybe somebody is watching the airport. So that is how somebody would know that the airplanes are taking off. And that would be the explanation of this 50-minute gap. So once he decided to go with complete radio silence, he didn't tell anyone about his plan to start a new training flight immediately. And he made a decision, and so they could see, would this phenomena appear again? And actually, it appeared. So somehow, it always knew when they are flying and when this 50-minute gap would pass. So he tried to intercept it, but we have to consider that this was a Hawk. It was a subsonic light jet airplane. So the maximum speed was about 800 kilometers per hour. And he couldn't do much. They soon figured out that they couldn't approach this phenomena beyond 10 kilometers, about 6 miles roughly. So they had to make a decision because this phenomena was really intruding them and it was affecting the flights. Pilots were speculating, bringing all sorts of problems. And they decided to ask the help, right? Plea for help. And that actually reminded me about the 80s program in Christopher Mellon, where he mentioned also when these incidents were happening around strike groups, they had a plea for help, right? Somebody should investigate this, take a note, right?
Exactly.
And they asked help from elite airplane unit, which was located around Belgrade on the military airport Batajnica. And there they have a MiG-21, right? Supersonic airplane, completely different domain now, and they requested 4 airplanes to come for help so they could better inspect what was happening there. And they received special mission, and I was the first guy who actually located and discovered 2 pilots from that special mission, which were Ivan Mamić and Ivan Žnidaršić. It was not easy to locate them, but I was somehow with good connections, they in the end gave me the number. And Ivan Mamić is very respected. He also is a counselor in Vietnam on the flight simulators, although he's retired, but he's still a working active job. And so I was able to interview him, and he explained to me everything what was happening. So they actually received the order to intercept and shut down, if possible, this UFO, so the story could end, right? And they flew from Belgrade, and since it was a secret mission, they flew very low, so they would sort of sneak there, so because this phenomena was obviously new very well, these flights when they are happening, somehow it knew. And the first day when they arrived, so they were ready. And again, the first group of airplanes would again took off. These was these training air flights. And these were now the base. So Their job was to be in the air around, again, 50 minutes when the phenomena would appear. They would land, and then the supersonic MiG-21 would take over the situation. Exactly that was what happened again. So the training group lands, and now the Ivan Mamich takes off, right? And his plan was that he will not fly too fast, because again, they knew that they couldn't approach closer than 6 miles. So he is flying steadily with sort of subsonic speeds. And as soon he approaches 6 miles, then this is his moment now, right? So he has a plan. He turns on the afterburners and immediately MiGs takes off with very now big speeds towards the phenomena. And actually his plan worked. Very soon he was in the range of the thermal K-13 rocket with infrared homing navigation. And he heard the tone in the airplane. That was the signal that that he has a lock and that he can now defy this rocket, which was part of his mission, right, to shut down this intrusion. And then this is now interesting part of the story. Now he goes over the radio to air traffic control, and he says, okay, guys, I have a lock, waiting permission to fire. And it was opposed on the radio. And it seems they couldn't now decide, right? That was the mission, but somehow who knows what was happening at the air traffic controller. They were discussing, it seems. And he was saying again, guys, please, I asking permission, the phenomena is flying off from me. And they couldn't make a decision, and phenomena very quickly moves off again. From around 10 kilometers, it quickly reached to 40 kilometers, so in a very quick time. And he's trying now to chase him towards the Adriatic Sea. And then suddenly they sent order to him to abandon the flight, to stop the mission and to turn around. And phenomena in that moment also disappears. So in the end, he had to turn around. He's now flying back towards Montenegro. And then again, suddenly now phenomena appears in front of him, which was completely impossible. So he was completely surprised because he was chasing it on the opposite side, and suddenly now he turned back, light again turned on, he could see it, radar again could pick it up, but it was on completely opposite side of the sky. So it was a complete surprise, and then in the air traffic control there was also comments like, there was also a special committee there that arrived from Belgrade. They commented that not a single terrestrial craft could have such performances. That was, for example, one of the comments in the air traffic control there. And then the game of mouse and cat started, right? They tried to chase it. Another bizarre point in the incident, that at some point the traffic control would say to Mamich, can you see it? And he would say, yes, I can see it. In that moment, the phenomena switches off. And then he says, okay, now I can see it. And then again, switches on. So light turns on, and again, radar can pick it up. So it happened multiple times. So it's really, again, we have this bizarre high strangeness element. So it was really surprising to all the guys. And the tensions was very, very big. And in the end, they decided to simply abort the mission, and he landed in the end, and the mission was unsuccessful, and phenomena manifested absolute superiority towards MiG-21.
So this was going on for a while. They'd have these training missions, and every time in the training mission, 50 miles in or 50 minutes in, this thing would appear, and it would keep the same distance from the planes that were involved in the training mission. And then they decide, let's try a trick. Let's try to trick it. In case somebody, some other country is monitoring our missions, we'll have a mission that's unannounced. And they go on this mission unannounced, and there it is again. And they try to shoot it down. Eventually, they try to shoot it down, but they never get the order. Did you ever figure out, why they changed their minds? Were they worried about retaliation, or they just didn't want to shoot something down, not knowing what it was?
It seems there was a big discussion in the air traffic control while they were trying to see what are their options, you know, what could be the possible implications. The moment passed and phenomena simply flew away, and that was it. However, that was not the end of these events. So actually, this part with the Podgorica in Montenegro was then arrived when, of course, phenomena continued, and there was again one situation when they were ready to take off. They were on the airport, and again phenomena appeared because the second group was ready, and there was also preparing the airplanes, and everybody was looking at it again. And at that point in time, General Zvonko Jurjevic says, I'm not interested anymore, I can't see it. And then the other pilots will say, but how you can't? It's right there above, really near the airport. And he says, I will not see it, I'm not seeing it, and I'm not interested. Because he was, you know, he simply, this whole drama, he was sick of it, he wanted to stop. And what is interesting, in that moment, the light switches off and never again appears over the Podgorica region again after that event. So that's the end for the Podgorica part. Really bizarre. But again, if you put it in the context of the UFO phenomena overall, over the time and space in a different country, sometimes we will have this component. Hard to interpret it, but that is what they reported. And there is another part of the story, too. And that happened again on the, now we are going back to the radar site on the south of Croatia, where the story actually started. And that is the part on the south of Croatia, this radar was there. And now on the Adriatic Sea, they were still detecting this phenomena from the Prevlaka radar now. But this time, the general arrived there, General Kulenovic, in that Prevlaka radar, and he said that this is becoming now the operating center for the navigation, because they will try again another intercept. So from Belgrade, these airplanes would arrive, again MiG-21, and there were several other situations that, again, they had a lock. And this was told by Dr. Aleksandar Kostovic, leading expert about radar equipment in Serbia, absolutely a big expert. And he also teaches on the university today. He's also into data science and so on. And he was there when this was happening. And again, MiG-21 in this situation had again the possibility to have a lock, but this time they couldn't get the signal that the rocket was locking. And so this time they couldn't get a lock, which was very interesting. And they decided that in these situations, the body that they were chasing was sort of cold, not hot, because this K-13 rocket was infrared homing rocket.
Because the target was cold, the rocket couldn't lock onto it. It would normally lock on something, a heat signal.
Exactly. They couldn't do anything. So that was the thing. And in the end, the phenomena, how it suddenly appeared and then suddenly somehow disappeared, and it never reappeared again in this type of manifestations on that part of the country. Of course, there was a committee there. They tried different possibilities, but there was a never clear and good answer what that could be. And again, like in many other military UFO cases, if there is no pressure afterwards, you know, there is sort of no ongoing defense interest. So the interest went down, and that is sort of now the part of the history. And if we didn't have this sort of chain reaction of events, this event would never come to the light of the day, and
right,
who knows how many of those incidents we lost in the history.
Well, there's some other incidents I want to ask you about, and we'll open up the phone lines as well. My guest is Juliana Marinković. We'll go into the break and be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Juliana Marinković, a journalist, a longtime journalist who's covered UFOs and former country of Yugoslavia, Croatia, Serbia, pretty amazing incidents that are very reminiscent of the Tic Tac case, in that this cat and mouse game that was played by this UFO with these warplanes, who at one point or at two points were ordered to shoot it down. In a moment, we'll open up the phone lines. I got a couple of more questions for Giuliano, and then we'll see what's on your mind. Right back with more Coast to Coast AM. Giuliano, I can't find the part of the article that I'm looking for right now, but I remember reading it. It might be the chapter, the translated chapter from the Serbian Air Force book, which mentioned about this UFO appearing directly in the flight line, or the flight path of these planes. It kind of reminded me of the Tic Tac case, where this Tic Tac went to the cap point that Dave Fravor was supposed to head toward. Did you get the same impression?
In this case, I would not maybe say just exactly like that, but when the airplane was returning back, it appeared in front of him. But I would not say that was his cap point, because the goal was to land.
Okay, I misunderstood. There is a reference in one of the articles to Marshal Tito, who was the ruler of Yugoslavia at the time. Did he take an interest in this?
Oh, yeah. So when General Kulanovic in the radar station Prevlaka was there, and he was leading this navigation of the airplanes and interception, the Alexander Kostic recalls that actually he was preparing reports, and the Tito, President Tito at the time, was in the Igalu, that was a place near Prevlaka. Sometimes he would spend free time there, and there was a zone of security around him. And since he was relatively close, General Kulenovic would pick up these reports that they would write, and they would go to President Tito, and Kostic said, yes, the president received these reports. However, we don't know what the reaction was and what were the discussions. But yeah, the president of the country received the UFO reports by testimony of Kostic.
Would that be the kind of thing that Marshal Tito would have passed along to the Russians, who were sort of, you know, they were the top dog in the Eastern Bloc in those days? I know in one of the articles I read about your work, it references Colonel Boris Sokolov, who was the Russian Ministry of Defense source that I had contacted first in 1993, who was sort of at the in charge of the Russian military's on 10-year-long UFO study. And I wonder, would the Yugoslavians have told the Russians about this?
There is a possibility. What we learned is that the Yugoslav Air Force actually had a small committee. And actually what we learned, it was led by Colonel Veljko Majstorovic. However, he is not alive anymore. But a journalist Vujicic from Belgrade gave me the contact number of the historian who knew him. And also from Vujicic's sources, he told me that it seems that this committee shared the information not only with Russians, but also with United States, because Yugoslavia was sort of like a country between two blocks, you know, always love-hate relationship. So there were some kind of rumors there, but it's hard to confirm it because the main participants are not alive, unfortunately, anymore.
We've got a couple of folks on the phones that have questions or comments for you. Let's go to the international line first. Norm in Toronto. Hey, Norm, you're on with Giuliano.
Hi, everyone. My question is this. I was wondering if your guest sees any difference in the way that events and incidents are handled between Europe and the U.S. and by extension Canada and the U.K. From official sources. My classic example is the Phoenix Lights, where initially government sources came out and made fun of it, and then later on they came supposedly clean and said it was a serious incident, and they were kind of looked upon with favor and kind of looked upon with as heroes. But from my standpoint, that kind of mixed up and obscured everything. So I was just wondering if your guest has any opinion on that. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Yeah, for current situation, I can't say a lot, because actually we don't have prominent cases So that are recorded recently. Also, we have to take into consideration the size of the countries. Now they are republics, they are relatively small size, and the frequency of these incidents, it seems, are not high. Of course, we will never know from the military side, but nothing leaked so far towards me. But I can for sure tell you about the Yugoslav era. So when these incidents were happening, actually civilian pilots would report them too. And journalists were also interested. They would cover these articles, and actually they would send the questions to Yugoslav Air Force. And Yugoslav Air Force would didn't want to confirm these military type of incidents. They would say, nothing is happening. We are not picking anything on the radar. But regarding civilian cases, at least, they are in public domain. They were in articles. So they said, most likely these are either weather balloons or spy weather balloons, and they would sort of try to explain it like that. Although by some manifestations, there wasn't a good correlation there. But yeah, they were sort of bringing down the cases. Yeah, there was no support then.
So similar, they'd come up with an excuse, a balloon that travels at 4,000 miles per hour. That seems kind of thin.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, the UFO issue is obviously a hot potato for military. It's hard to say something when you don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. I can sort of understand that, but better transparency would bring us good. Also, because the military domain have the most data, unfortunately, we are having problems to bring the issue on the bigger, better level in civilian domain, and this is the paradox of our society, unfortunately, and this is why the progress took so long to get it.
Other than that chapter in that book, are there documents that you squeezed out of the former Yugoslav military or any of these independent republics now? Do they have the equivalent of the Freedom of Information Act? Can you access military records?
There is a recent version of Freedom of Information in Croatia, for example. There is also something in Serbia. What I'm hearing that for some incidents, we have to have 50 years of the time span to request some documents. We are not there yet. Also, what I'm hearing from my sources, even if we would reach this 50-year limit, the archives are so badly managed and they are not sorted, and actually they think that even if we would reach that position, it took them a long time even to check these documents. So it's not a good situation regarding that. However, General Zvonko Jurjevic, who was the leader of this regiment in Podgorica at the time, the incident, he recognized the importance. As I said previously, that was his plea for help. And he told me he always was interested to have an expert body of people that would be gathered in some sort of conference, military people that would try to better resolve these cases. And he actually gave me his logbooks of these flights, because he was at one point the commander of Yugoslav Air Force near the end of Yugoslavia, and he used his position to took the archives, and he gave me the copies to my cooperator in Belgrade. And for example, it's very interesting, whenever this UFO would happen near the date, he would put an X, and I have these logs.
Wow, that's excellent. You have to write a book about this, Giuliano. We'll take east of the Rockies, my friend Barry in South Carolina. Hey, Barry, how you doing?
Hello, George Knapp. What an incredible program tonight. As usual, George, I love your UFO slanted type programs. And I've got to tell you real quick, bumper music, boy, oh boy, George Thorogood, Tom Petty, the Rolling Stones. Keep it up.
Well, thank you, Barry. What's on your mind?
Listen, it was 39 years ago, George, I moved from Wilmington, North Carolina, getting a divorce up to the Outer Banks of North Carolina, just south of Cape Hatteras on Ocracoke Island. And I moved in with a buddy of mine who was living there, and he told me a story about the spring of 1979. He was 75 miles off the coast in a sport fishing boat, with four other guys, and they were fishing for blue marlin. And George, he swears that all five of them witnessed a UFO-type flying saucer, typical shape, round, thin, so forth. And he and the other boys were estimated that it was traveling at approximately 200 miles an hour, and it went straight into the ocean, George, and disappeared about 10 miles from them.
That's a good story. You know, I hear there are a lot of fishermen because they're out at night. This, you know, the sky's dark and sees those kinds of things. Giuliano, do you have any USO-type cases from the former Yugoslavia where, as Barry was talking about, a UFO that goes into the water or comes out of the water?
Unfortunately, no. There were some civilian cases that I saw from time to time, but they are with lower quality. I'm not following sort of those, but I think there are a couple in public domain. But regarding naval archives, there was nothing like that. Again, maybe it's related to the size. It was an Adriatic Sea. So, yeah, I would not say there was such an activity that we have records, at least in military archives.
Barry, I appreciate the call. Maybe you should track those guys down, get some names and numbers, and we can maybe try to get more details on that. But thanks for calling, as always. On the first-time caller line, Rick in Boca Raton. Hey, Rick.
Oh, hi, George. Hi, Julian. I have a videotape somewhere from years ago. It was probably 79 or 80. It was right when I moved to Florida, and it's a NASA tape. And it showed a propulsion device that's a half sphere that had, that was sitting on like a maybe a 3 foot square platter, and it had a some type of flame underneath it, you know, being produced, and it was an anti-gravity type of propulsion device that they were shooting golf balls at it, and no matter what they threw at it, it would not let the golf ball touched the sphere. It would repel the sphere before the golf ball would get to the sphere. Nothing could touch it. It would just repel it at the same speed that it was shot at. And Julian, have you seen or heard of a NASA file tape that would have this device? It's anti-gravity is what it is.
Giuliano, does anything like that ring a bell? Have you heard about that kind of technology?
No, nothing from our side here. Yeah, so I couldn't give any confirmation on that.
All right. Rick, actually, I have heard a very similar story from Bob Lazar, who said that there was something very much, almost exactly what you're describing out at S4, the place where he worked, and it was his first day. The guy he worked with experimented with it, throwing golf balls, and they would ping off, and it was such a violent reaction that the golf ball, he said, knocked the tiles off the roof. But thank you for calling. Giuliano, tell me this. When you've got the names and the testimony of all these generals, when you go up to the door and knock on the door of these generals and track them down, that would be kind of a nervous moment, I would think. These guys are used to being in charge of things.
And absolutely, and it is always really, you never know how it will end. It is very, you know, exciting at one moment. But again, you know, maybe a guy has a standpoint on the issue and maybe he will immediately laugh at me. So it is hard to actually predict how it will happen. So I try to make the best presentation possible. And, for example, I spoke with five former Yugoslav generals. Of course, three of them are actually those that were involved in these Podgorica incidents in Montenegro. So they directly confirmed everything to me. I have recorded interviews with them. For example, I also spoke with Anton Tus, very respected general, a very respected expert and a pilot, too, in the Yugoslav era, and later he was in the Croatian army. So he told me that, for example, I got a different reaction from them. He told me that he absolutely knew about these cases from 1950s. They were happening. It's a part of the pilot's military domain, but his personal view was that these cases were sort of optical illusions. I still respect his input. I also told him that we have some other inputs now, different cases that came to light. He started to become interested in that, and he asked me from where. And then I told him about these witnesses and about the book, and he showed interest actually to if I could send him the material. I sent him. I never heard back. So, for example, he was sort of neutral on that. And another general was Ivan Mishkovich. He was expert for intelligence, and he was actually cooperating with President Tito. That was more like a mild curiosity to see has he ever encountered these incidents. And he told me that he never got in contact with that subject. He didn't know anything. So out of five, three yes, one neutral, and one didn't know anything.
What about abduction type cases? We have so many abduction reports here in the West. Do you have the same kind of stories in Serbia, Croatia, former Yugoslavia?
Yes, we do. They are part of the media, and also these cases are reported, sometimes also privately reported. I knew a couple of colleagues that are dealing with that. They are very good. They know the history behind this type of phenomena too, but I can say it's not my direct interest, because I think we first have to resolve the first layer of the phenomena, especially in the area of the public debate, in the representation in media. So we have to go step by step. Definitely the phenomenon is multi-layered. I'm aware of these cases, and they are present, but again, they are not sort of my direct interest. But yes, we do have them.
Yeah, you're sort of a nuts and bolts guy who deals with the technology. What about crashes, alleged crashes? We've heard about different alleged crash sites around the world. Anything like that in Yugoslavia?
There is a story from 1966 that the UFO crashed in Slovenian city Otočac. Slovenia was also part of Yugoslavia, right? But I actually resolved that case because I was so irritated. It was presented in media over and over again, and it is actually still rehashed. Every few years, that's actually the story that always gets in mix with other credible stories. And actually what happened, that one Italian guy, Andrea Zoboli, actually, from Italian skeptical group, made an experiment to see how many people will fall for this video of alien autopsy. That was sort of his Ray Santillo version, but more focused toward Yugoslavian public. Many people did fall, and I actually discovered that he was the author. I interviewed him back in 2008. And he told me everything. The cost of the body that he created was 200 euros. It was a fun experiment for him, but unfortunately, even today, people are still making references to this and thinking that this is some sort of ultra-secret operation of recovered UFO.
Well, that might have been his intent all along, just to muddy the waters. Giuliano Marinkovic, thank you very much for being here. I hope we can have you back, and I hope you'll stay in touch and send me your lists of those stories that you collect. Thank you very much.
It was a pleasure, George. Thank you.
I'll talk to you again. Thanks also to my earlier guests, Lou Elizondo and Jan Harzan, and to my colleagues there at Coast, Michael Cosio, who has nerves of steel, Donna Walker, our webmaster tonight, Lex Lonehood, Dan Galani, and Chris Boros. I'm George Knapp. I'll be back next Sunday night. Good night, everyone.